Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is the 27th, April 27th.
It is.
Yep.
27, right? It's May. Shit, well, according to Naima, it's 4th of July.
Basically,
shit. Summertime.
It's, so, exactly.
It's basically summertime. Summertime.
Well, tomorrow should be in the 80s here in New York.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Not Naima making Thanksgiving up in you.
Word.
You know, no, my thing, though, is like once 4th of July is over, the year is over.
Okay. The year
then
is
it's
over.
Christmas.
Yeah, then it's Christmas.
It's Christmas,
then
it's Thanksgiving. Once 4th of July is over, it's Halloween, which is basically Thanksgiving, which is basically Christmas.
So, great. But anyway, yeah, I'm gonna pull my bike out tomorrow for the first time this year and see what my wind is feeling like, you know?
I need to go outside and skate. Oh, I didn't talk about going roller skating. I wasn't here. So y'all know I went roller skating the day before my birthday.
For your birthday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a rink in Long Island, and I think I've said this on air, all the rinks in New York City, which has a really heavy roller skating culture with Black people, are closed.
Yeah, all of them, right? Not for COVID, they're just gone, right?
They're just gone. Empire was the last one in Brooklyn, I think it was a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of parks rinks, but they're not, you know, they're like kiddie rinks. It's not, you're not getting no DJ, you know, playing shit. So
the only New York energy you're getting for roller skating now is in the summertime in Central Park. Yeah,
skaters go to the park. But like the skaters here, it's like, people, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen the upswing of videos on TikTok and Instagram. Like, people have been really copying skates since the pandemic. In fact, I couldn't even get the original ones I wanted because the brand Moxie, which is like a really popular roller skating brand, has just been consistently sold out.
Wow.
Like, they're like really high end. And it's what professional skaters use, and it's indoor, outdoor, and danceable, and you know, all that stuff. So there's a ring in Long Island called United Skates, and they do adult nights 3 times a week. And these joints, it took me 3 weeks to get tickets because they sell out like the moment they go on sale because they're not doing full capacity and they're not doing tickets.
So wait, you went to like the like an ATL like to the adult night with Ms.
Yeah, exactly.
Ms. Platinum.
But it was fantastic. I think that there's one night where they do like more contemporary R&B and hip hop, but this was like soul classics and house. It was like some of the music you'll hear at like Sunday Sermon in New York. And I realized that it was the first time I had been, oh shit, I actually have a roller skate lesson that I'm supposed to be taking right now online and I forgot. Anyway, I realized that it was the first time I had been like someplace where people were like dancing and chilling, like since
having a good time
the pandemic. Yeah, and I needed that energy so much, but like it was so much fun. These people take it so seriously.
Oh yeah.
And it was great, but anyway, I haven't tried my skates on sidewalk yet, which is nervous. I have all kinds of pads. I see
people when last summer out of Yankee, there were people who would ride their skates around the track and stuff like that. Yeah, so there's like a little contingent out here. They there's nowhere to go if it's cold outside, but they still around. They are here. They getting it cracking. You know.
I need to get my skates to spin outside. I'm trying to learn some tricks. That's what the lesson I'm supposed to be taking right now is about like learning how to do tricks and moves and you know all that other kind of stuff. I'm trying to get
peace to the skaters. Peace to the skaters. I got it to the listeners, your friends on the Pop Life Podcast complained because they said I gave too many topics this week.
Nigga, you gave like 25 topics.
Well, we missed last week. I was trying to just do some. Oh, wait. Shout out to cousin of the show, Reagan Gomez. Her birthday was a few days, 2-3 days ago. Just wanted to acknowledge her birthday. And
happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And she'll be on the show again soon. It's. I mean, I was going to tell her this when she comes to the show, but and I'm sure she knows, like, because she's very on the pulse of what's going on. But like, she almost more than any other girl from her era, like, she's like way up there with like the kind of Tumblr and the younger kids as like legendary GOAT dime piece status. Like, yeah. Reagan is like higher than people you would expect, and she's beautiful. She deserves it, but like, her name is higher than people who you might expect to be. Like, it's like,
I think because
with that crowd.
I think because Reagan has stayed so visible.
True.
You know, Reagan. There aren't a lot of her contemporaries.
Yeah, that are kind of working
active
around
on Twitter or in the conversation. Like,
true.
People really feel like they know Reagan. I mean, shit. Like, how we. You know, mm-hmm. Reagan on Twitter, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's like, people really feel like they know Reagan. I think that has a lot to do with it. She has stayed relevant because she's around.
So she's around, yeah.
She was also introduced to us on a sitcom on Parenthood, which was geared to younger kids. So we kind of followed her.
You kind of grew up
as she grew up with us.
She did TI videos.
King Magazine.
Jay-Z videos. She's popping. So yeah, peace to her. This is old now, but I was happy to see the outpouring of love for the god Luther Vandross on his birthday, which is I guess about a week or two ago. I hadn't seen that much outpouring on his birthday previously. Like, it just seemed like for some reason this year, I don't know why, but everybody like online was basically like posting Luther pictures and videos and like a nod.
I think it was like his 70th.
He turned 70.
Yeah, he turned 70.
Yeah, he had a Google Doodle.
Yeah, Miles on. He had a Google Doodle thing. Too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
And it linked to like a YouTube video that was just really sweet, and it saw him, he was like singing in the clouds with a piano or something. It was it was lovely.
I didn't see the Google Doodle, but I mean, I'm just happy because I feel like he kind of gotten a little lost over the years, like
Luther only had like two pop hits at the very end of his life, like when he was on Jay. He wasn't a big crossover.
No, he was us.
He was us, and then actually it fucked with him like a lot.
Sure,
he didn't get that, but and also I think that because you know that whole Quiet Storm era of vocalists, they don't get sampled like Jeffrey Osborne,
Anita,
and Anita, and all, because their songs aren't really like Luther actually gets sampled probably the most out of all of them. It was like when James Ingram died, and people were like, "Who?" And then you name a song, and they're like, "Oh, you know what I mean?" Like people don't really reference them or sample them like that. Luther is the one they do the most, but I'm really happy to see the love, especially after that. That period we went through where Twitter was talking about Luther don't even slap, and I was ready to
slap. That was craziness. I was getting mad at people with that.
And I'm glad that everybody's come to their better senses.
Yeah, and I have to say, I could say her name. I'm not gonna say her name, but peace to the young lady who actually brought me to a Luther concert. I got to see Luther at the Garden.
Luther Live was the best.
That nigga bodied that shit like I was like, this is crazy.
I was so jealous.
I saw him at Westbury Music.
Okay.
And it was just actually just probably like two or three years before he died.
Oh, that's recent. So, okay.
Yeah, not his last tour, but maybe like the one before the last tour. Mm-hmm. And not 2 or 3 years before he died, but 2 or 3 years before his last tour, because his last tour was a couple years before he died.
Okay.
And I think his last tour was 2003, and he died in 2005 or something like that. But I was I'm so glad I got a chance to. Luther Live was
crazy, because like the other thing about Luther, like I mean, going off on a little tangent, but the other thing about Luther, like he was funny. So like he'll be on stage and cracking jokes and shit. Like he was like he could be a very funny person. He was very entertaining as well as he was his talent. Like he gave you a fucking show, man. Like it was.
So hearing his, because with Luther, his background vocalists were as important as
Lisa
Luther
Fisher
started as a background arranger and as a background vocalist and arranger. So Lisa Fisher, like just so to hear all that stat live, to hear it. work live and the arrangements with Nat Harris. Oh my God. Like Luther was just a, he was a masterful song, like maestro.
Yeah.
Just, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So peace to the Vangelis family.
Peace to Luther Ronzoni.
Yeah.
Peace to Ronnie, as the family calls him.
Gotta give an RIP to Shock G.
Man,
Digital Underground, who passed away at 57 years old. I saw somewhere they said it might have been a heart attack. I mean, it kind of doesn't matter. He passed away. It doesn't really matter what the cause was.
Somebody told me it seemed like it might be a drug overdose that apparently. Yeah. I'm talking shit, but this is what somebody told me that.
Allegedly.
He was found in a hotel room.
No.
And he had been apparently dealing with some depression.
Yeah.
So, but either way, still just.
Guy was a, he was a great musician. Really smart guy, really in tune.
Crazy underrated.
Yeah, crazy underrated. Bay Area kid, discovered Tupac musically and, put him out into the world. And had, Humpty Dance still plays to this day. You got to say peace to his family.
Even beyond Humpty Dance, it was actually a few months, it was sometime last year, I was listening to some Digital Underground stuff for the first time in a really long time, and I was like, yo, this production has held up really well. Sonically, I didn't have an appreciation for Shock as a producer until very recently, and I'm ashamed to say that. And I was speaking to a friend of mine. I was speaking to Salam Remy, who is a really well-known producer, but is also a real good friend of mine. And he was like, "Yo, Shock used to fuck me up when I was younger." He was like, so many people borrowed from him or were influenced by him,
Because Shock could play. He could actually play. Yeah. So he wasn't just he was doing samples too, but he could play the piano. So he really was a very musical person.
Right.
So peace to him. Let's see.
And Black, did you guys talk about Rob?
No, I'm gonna get to that in a second.
Okay.
I got a commercial, Inca.
Oh Lord.
That pisses me off.
I
got two of them actually, but I'm gonna hold one for next week.
Is one of them about the people driving this goddamn Corona?
No.
That pisses me off.
The commercial that pisses me off is the "Let's make lots of money." The black guy driving in the fucking car
with the singing.
You know what that pisses me off? First of all, that nigga's got a box haircut, and it's 2021. I'm pissed off about that. I'm pissed off about a black man driving in the desert by himself. That's fucking dangerous. And it's fucking dangerous. And you know what else pissed me off? I don't even know that song. That is not a white song that black people like. So I'm really pissed off because that was a missed opportunity. We as black people, there is a volume of white songs that we like too. Like, all kind of shit. David Bowie, Pat Benatar, there's fucking some Rolling Stones.
All the Muro imports.
All that new wave.
All the new wave.
Bunch of shit they could have played, man. And they play a song. I don't know that song, so that nigga would not be in that car singing that song because nobody knows that song, nigga.
What is that commercial for? But I don't.
Who knows?
Never actually. I think I only heard it in syncs and stuff.
I never heard that song until I saw that commercial. And I was like, they could have played, George Michael. Like, they could have played so much dope.
Maybe they couldn't afford the dope shit. Maybe that was the budget. This car.
I mean, it was a popular song. I haven't even seen the commercial, Jeff, and I know what song. It was like the "I Got the Brains, You Got the
Money." Yeah.
Lots of money. I know the song.
Riding down the highway in the middle of the Nevada. With a hoard ornament singing?
What's wrong with you?
Fucking bullshit, man. I hate that commercial. I got another
I hate one. That commercial, too.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
I don't know what that commercial is for, but they play it on Bravo all the time.
All the goddamn time. Oh, I got one more thing, and then we'll jump in. So, this is not national, but here in New York, Channel 33 on the Spectrum cable is actually a New Jersey channel. I never saw it. But they show
sound like a cable access
all the old, like old shows like Dragnet.
Is it WeTV?
No, it's not WeTV. It's a Me TV.
That's what I meant. MeTV. Yes.
MeTV. Yes.
It's not a Jersey-based TV show. I've seen it. I've gotten in other states. But yeah, they show the old, like, older
super
than
old.
Nigga, what is Dragnet?
This old ass nigga watching is? My Spy.
Oh, my
nigga,
God.
They show Mannix. They show Mannix, Barnaby Jones.
So they had the Great American Hero, Greatest American Hero, whatever.
Some that shit, was yeah.
Yeah, the night. Guy who couldn't land right. That was just yeah, the superhero who couldn't land
they
right.
They show what? Perry Mason every night. They show the Twilight Mason. Zone every night. Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock, Al. Wait, what's the one you want to know about, Anchor? Which one you said?
Dragnet?
Like, Dragnet.
So Dragnet.
You know the theme song. I promise you know the theme
Dragnet
song.
Dragnet was on in probably the late 50s to early 60s. It was a cop show. I forget the guys' names, but they talk like this. They talked in like kind of that detective talk, and it was based in Los Angeles, but it was Los Angeles like early. So basically, they were like the tone of the show was like there's a glitz and glamour type of LA, and there's the real LA where niggas is getting killed and shot and da da da, and that's the LA that we're showing you.
Why would I know Law and Order from the 50s?
Yeah, basically, it's Law and Order from the 50s.
I'm good on that.
Thanks, the thing that the whole song that goes dun 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 dun, dun,
yeah,
dun
yeah, yeah.
That's the Dragnet theme.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Anyway, peace to MeTV for holding me down at 3 a.m. when I'm waiting for the new Adventures of Christine to come on, and in between the time that the King of Queens go off. And a great new Adventures of Christine.
Not the King of Queens.
It's a gap in there. And that's what MeTV hold me down.
Nigga, do you have a recliner? Jeff, do you have a recliner?
No.
Because this Jeff is recliner is television.
Recliner. 22 and 74 simultaneously.
Recliner and cup cozy. Like one of them foam cozies that
I never liked the foam. But you know what I have been doing lately? When I go to the store and get a cup of ice, I keep that. And so I'm pouring my stuff in the ice cup because I'm 83 years old. Nigga.
This nigga got a cabinet, it got a freezer full of butter pecan, ginger ale, and saltines.
And Pepsi. And Pepsi. Put my peanuts in my
Coca-Cola.
Exactly. There you go.
Peace to the new Adventures of Old Christine, though. I remembered how much I loved that show because I caught it on TV the other day.
Like,
I got to watch this from the beginning.
Yeah, it's super dope. So let's jump into some real topics here. Dragnet, B. Split. Dragnet's popping. Mannix is popping. But anyway, let's mention Black Rob, who passed away as well. Has it been a week? Last week.
I think it was last Saturday.
Yes. So almost a week. Passed away. Had a lot of complications.
Rob had lupus. He had
kidney issues.
Here's the thing about, and I'm saying this to somebody who at one point was really close with Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Rob was in, and I talked about this on Twitter because people were about to make it about Puff, which I think is unfair to Rob because his life was
in the Rob situation.
Yeah, because his life was more than his bad. Rob didn't even sign a Bad Boy till he was damn near 30 years old. Mm-hmm. Rob went into the system for the first time when he was 12. He was in jail during his life more than he was out of jail. And when he was outside, he did not know how to be outside. And I'm not...
He was institutionalized.
Yeah, he was so institutionalized. And I'm not talking shit. This is a conversation I had with Rob, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, he was so institutionalized. And you take somebody like that and you just give them money and like access. Like Rob needed therapy. Actually maybe needed some meds. You know what I'm saying? Like Rob, because Rob, you never knew which Rob you was going to get. And Rob drank heavy. He used like... The nigga lived a hard life. So I was trying to say without saying explicitly that Rob's health issues preceded even like his deal. You know what I'm saying? Like
his fame.
And it wasn't just a matter of, oh, Puff should have paid his medical bill. All you would have done, all anything would have been was a delay.
A Band-Aid.
Yeah, it would have been a Band-Aid. Plus, Rob was signed to Duck Down for like 10 years. So, like, if you want to talk about a label taking care of somebody, ain't nobody talking about Duck Down, you know? So
I had a conversation about
niggas like the target Puff. And yeah. I'm not saying that he's not worthy of criticism, but it's not that simple all the time.
Well, I had a conversation with somebody about this a couple of days ago. And I said, you know, again, you know, Puff's got his things that people, you know, which aren't part, in my opinion, part of this conversation. I said, look, man, it's obviously, you know, really sad situation that you know, Rob, you know, passed away and, you know, wasn't doing well and everything. But I don't understand why Black people think like, okay, Woe came out in 2000, correct?
Yep.
So that means that Puff was supposed to take care of him because they did some great business 21 years ago.
And they did drop a sophomore album in 2005, but then Rob went to jail. That was the part I was trying to tell people. Like, Rob didn't even fulfill his contract.
His side. Yeah, his side.
Like, he went to jail after Life Story came out. And again, I'm saying this not to diss Rob and Cape for Puff. I'm saying this because context is important. And even in interviews that Rob did, Rob would be like, I'm not saying this. Even in the interview where he said Bad Boy left me for dead because they took me off the roster when I went to jail, he still said, I wasn't disciplined. This is not their fault, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Rob went to jail. He didn't even promote the sophomore album. He went to jail after Life Story for a minute too. That album only went platinum. And I mean, granted, he was also on, like, you know, he had a joint.
He was on the No Way Out album.
On the No Way Out album, mm-hmm. You know, he had I Love You Baby, and he was on 24 Hours to Live, I think. And, you know, he did some writing as all rappers do, as all Bad Boy rappers do for Puff. But, like, I can tell you almost assuredly that Rob did not actually, even though his presence was really important in a post-Biggie Bad Boy, in terms of actual net revenue, I can promise you, Rob wasn't bringing in a lot of revenue, right? And yeah, there's the label family situation and whatever, but like, I don't know what motherfuckers think. Like,
well, now, that's
it's a record business.
That's my issue. It's a business, and nobody asks. You know, nobody says, "Yo, you know, Harado was fucked up. Why Jimmy Iovine hold him down, or some artist, or what's her name? The girl that was with 50, who was the girl that was with 50 for a minute."
Olivia's
fucked up. Why didn't Clive Davis reach out? Because he was trying to save for and on and on and on. Nobody says that to the chairmen of these companies who actually could do stuff, right? Nobody ever holds their feet to the fire. And I'm not saying
the people who and the people who hold the purse strings for these JVs.
That's what I'm saying. Go ahead, bro.
I will say, in fairness, they also do not walk around cloaked in Black Power fists. And we need to do for one another and respect Black business, right? Like, so I think when you operate under that mantra, there will be some expectations, albeit ridiculous expectations.
That's what I'm saying.
There will be expectations, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I pose the question to people, like forget the record business part, right? Like, it was just this whole idea that, like I said, people are very kind and very generous with other people's money.
Yes.
People are very benevolent, right? And very philanthropic when it's not their bag, right? And this isn't about what you can do versus what someone can do. It's like, what's the cutoff for Puff?
Yeah. It never stops.
Tell me, I ask legitimately. Like, you guys tell me what is the legitimate cutoff for him. When does it not become his obligation in this warped sense for him to take care of someone? Right? Is it a guy who worked at the summer? He worked at the summer of 2002 at Bad Boy. He got medical bills.
I might need to call Puff for some money the way people be talking. And also, the thing about it is there are actual people in Sean Combs' life that he is fucked over. I'm not gonna dispute that.
No, most of those people, I don't think he could.
Right.
He'd be like, yeah, I fucked that nigga over. But the
crazy shit is, most of those situations, the most egregious situations, are ones that the timeline don't even know about, right?
Yeah.
And I say this all the time. The internet has made it so that people know just enough about the record business that they think they know everything about the record business.
They don't know shit.
No wrong. They get, like, even I'm skipping ahead, but even like Lior's message at X's funeral said something about like, I knew Earl was going to hit a wall, but unfortunately, no, I knew DMX was going to hit a wall, but
unfortunately, took Earl with him.
Earl with you. I understood what that meant. Mm-hmm. People got wild offended and were like, but Lior and his family still eating off DMX. I'm like, do you know how long Lior has been making a fuck ton of money? Like, are you kidding? Like, that you think
if
that
you,
like,
if, you took, if you slice? If you subtracted, if you subtracted every dollar that DMX brings in to Lior's life at this point, his lifestyle is not changing, my guy.
Exactly.
I promise you, my nigga, he's not going to be in the middle seat on Southwest. I can assure you that.
Lior only noticed
that. Ask him for extra peanuts.
Yeah, I was like, do y'all understand what that pisses me off because I know that that comes from Dame talking shit about Lior. And I'm like, there are more people who fuck with Lior than don't, by the way.
And if we being honest, there are more people who fuck with Puff than don't. And right. and a lot of these arguments that are taking place on the timeline are arguments that the people that they're arguing for aren't even having.
Exactly. They've kind of straightened things out
This is why I will say he doesn't necessarily engage in that. Like, I'm 100% sure he sees it. I'm 100% sure he knows what the vibe is, right? But he doesn't really engage in that because, in my opinion, there's no real need to. He's good with Loom and he's good with Shine.
Yeah. They've said that. They've said that. Yes, yeah, so and we made our peace.
Whatever that means, right?
Yeah, whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
And sometimes it's just getting some shit off your chest. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll never forget, like, listening to the one of the bass players from like Rolls Royce and basically like being at Norman Whitfield's deathbed and was just like, yo, why you just ain't give me my money? And it wasn't like clearly he couldn't get the money at that point, but he just kind of wanted to just express
have that convo.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I just think that. You know, Puff is just he's low hanging fruit,
easy target.
These are usually not smart arguments. They're usually not people that understand.
So I get that.
I was like, fam, he had a platinum album. I'm like, nigga, how much money do you think you can make off a platinum album? Listen, and how long do you think it lasts?
That's what I'm thinking. He did have a platinum album, but it
took 2 years to make. First of all, it took 2 years to make that album. And they would have studio lockouts. I literally, this is when I was at Bad Boy, would have to go find Rob because he was missing studio time. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a platinum album, but people don't know how much these shits cost to make.
And it was 21 years ago. It was 20. Right. Yeah, I was talking to this dude on Instagram. He was like, you can't front, man. Yo, Rob saved Bad Boy. I was like, okay, this conversation's over, bro. You sound retarded. Like, there's nothing else to talk about.
What?
Like, what are you talking
to anybody
about?
That somehow has become a narrative that Rob saved Bad Boy. And, like, Rob was an important part of the
team. Yeah, he contributed.
But when Big died, Puff became the Bad Boy marketing partner. Mm-hmm. He needed all those other people with him.
And Mace.
But he needed all those other people with him, but Rob was important to that. But it was also Rob and the Locks and Total and Faith and Puff and Mace. Like
112.
And 112. All of that.
Two things that I don't really that bother me is that,
and Carl,
I don't like Rob was a 52-year-old man, mm-hmm. and his life around Puff may have been about 8 years, on the extreme scale, right? So this is a man who has lived a life and has touched other people, and to make his death about another man, just so, to me, it's so disrespectful, right? Like I'm sure Rob has done something for someone, mm-hmm. that meant some shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. I would be hard pressed to think he lived a life and didn't contribute to other people and pour into other people and be more than just, oh, the nigga Puff didn't pay his bills.
And that's why that's why I kind of went on a tangent about Rob on Twitter, and I thought about it before I did it, but I already saw where the conversation was going. And the thing is, like, there are so many parallels with Rob and X. And when Rob was clear and sober, he was a genius. He was funny. He was witty. He was fucking talented. He was such a great storyteller. But Rob did not have the public interface with the world as just Rob Ross as a person that DMX did. So people didn't know.
They didn't know that side.
Rob was.
Yeah.
So that's the other. And that's what I was arguing with people. And folks were like, you caping for Puff. I was like, no, I'm telling you that there's more to this man's story. But also, like, even as everybody's like, we got to talk about insurance for our artists in the music business, like, this is also a conversation just about Black men over 50, period, right? Like,
because everybody who
died, you know, niggas that got insurance, that ain't
everybody who died in the last 2 weeks, you know, X, Shock, Rob, there was like one or two more people who passed away, but like, they all the same, basically the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was like 50, 51, 57, 54.
But I also think that conversation is one that we often forget that we have that conversation quite frequently,
mm-hmm.
right? Black men of a certain age need to go to the doctor. We have that.
Take care of yourself. Nigga, he's gonna put a finger up your ass and check your prostate. It's
right.
Get it done, my nigga.
But I think that what we're missing is that we think of them as sort of rap stars, and we think of them as having this enormous access, and we're forgetting that they're sort of cross-demoed with these other Black men that are facing these same issues.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And we're just processing as, oh, you could just go to that. Like, nigga, Serena Williams had issues with her doctor.
Right.
Yeah. And almost,
you know,
died.
What I'm saying? And all that shit. Right. So it's no, I say all that to say, man, like the idea, there's a lot of hindsight being 2020, and that's always, it makes for great conversation on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You get to sound smart and you get to talk to the people that kind of feel like that. But, you know, actually, when you peel the layer of the onion back, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't really sound that smart.
You sound smart to a dumb
man. It's low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And it's also not that different a conversation than just healthcare in America. Period. I'm like, you mad at Puff when you should be mad about how hard it is just to fucking afford healthcare, because your aunt who got laid off from the plant 20 years ago ain't got healthcare right now. Yeah. Fucking either. Are you calling them niggas and asking them to pay her?
Can't afford her medication. Yeah. You know? Speaking of which, I get my second shot tomorrow. I thought it was supposed to be Monday, but actually they pushed me to Wednesday, which is cool.
Why? I'm curious.
I was supposed to, but the date to get it actually was last week, but I was away. I went to Atlanta. Okay. So then I was responsible. I called and told them I was going to be away to get another appointment. And they told me 426 over at Yeshiva. Walked over there yesterday, chill. And the woman said they didn't get their batch of second dose yet.
Oh.
They get their second, she's like, you're right. You're just off by 2 days. So they get their batch of second doses tomorrow. So, but this is the wild thing, because of, you know, the amount of people that have gotten the vaccines and, you know, Biden. Like, tomorrow, she was like, just come anytime. Like, you don't even need appointments no more. You can just walk.
Oh yeah, up. Now it's open. It's open to everybody.
You can just come whenever, yeah. Whatever. Just show up. So I go tomorrow whenever I.
You gotta go early.
Nah, it's light over there. The sheep is, it was empty. It was empty. With no happening over there. So I'm
better go tomorrow before you miss your window.
Yeah. No, I'm going tomorrow. I don't know what time. I'm definitely going tomorrow. So I get my second shot and I'll be fully vaccinated, and I could change my Twitter tag like Inka did. Didn't you just say vaccine something? When you got fully vaccinated,
right now.
Yeah, but you did. You did. It did have said it at one time. I had said something about fully vaccinated. Something. something vaccinated. Anyway, yeah. So yes, I'm looking forward to that. I got two movies for y'all. Three. Okay, I'm gonna go with the Korean movie that nobody here is gonna watch, called Night in Paradise. It's a gangster movie. It's mad violent. It's kind of lit. I know you're not gonna watch it, but whoever wants to watch out there listening, Netflix, Night in Paradise. Second movie, Netflix as well, Stowaway. It's about, it stars, what's name, Anna Kendrick and some other people. It's about this three-man crew who are going to Mars, and there's a dude who was fixing the ship and got knocked out, and so he's on the ship. Like, he wasn't supposed to be there. He's a black dude, too, by the way. And it's about kind of like what happens because there's not enough oxygen and blah, 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 blah. It was all right. It was cool. Third movie, this is a popular one, Mortal Kombat. If you played the video game, you should watch it because it's a fun movie. It ain't deep. It's easy. You know, it's a lot of, you know, but they use a lot of shit from the video game in there. A lot of the moves, all the get over here, finish him, fatality. They stick all of that shit into the
movie. Oh, my God.
They manage to stick all of that shit into the movie. It's all the characters, you know, Lin, what's his name? Lin Kang something, Kano. It's worth it. It's worth it.
I actually got Mortal Kombat at the beginning of shutdown, and I spent like a week playing it obsessively, and then I haven't played it since.
You should watch the movie then, because all that shit is in the movie. And it's actually set up for part
two. It's gotten so much harder. That shit was hard as fuck.
Yeah, it's set up for part two or whatever, so Mortal Kombat is the way. Anybody else got any movies before we move to the next thing?
You know what's interesting? I literally go through like three series and three movies a week. And I can't remember any of them.
Me neither. I remember
so much of so many
as
of
as soon as we like, get off.
Background for me, you know, y'all know, y'all brought up like heavier subject material here, and I'd be like, I can't watch it right now because it requires too much. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think if there's anything else I watched recently that was really a standout, aside from Invincible, which I know we're going to talk about. And I,
were you watching movies?
No, I did not. I am. I have started. I started Snowfall. I've started Snowfall.
Oh, okay.
I'm binging. I recently binged this weekend on Aretha.
What did you think, the genius one?
How was it?
I thought it was solid. I thought it was really solid. I had a very nitpicky issue, which was the audio engine. I just felt like the audio was off. They didn't really do Cynthia service by they didn't mix that well.
Yeah, okay. Somebody said they didn't think Cynthia could sing, and I was like, "Oh no, that's not at all."
She can sing, but her vocals it bothers me because it's so clear when I listen to it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a very easy watch, very you know fairly accurate. Mm-hmm. Piece to what's my man named Dorsey that played James Cleveland, which was like spot on.
He nailed James?
Yeah, he nailed James, man. Okay. The rough voice and all of that. But I did Snowfall season one in like 3 days, 2 days. So I'm locked in on that. There's nothing really new. I'm good. I'm straight. Yeah, I'm straight.
Black Ladies, that show came back.
How was it?
It's a little bumpy.
I didn't like it the last season, honestly. I tried, and I'm glad they got the renewal. Like, I want to see black people working.
I'm happy for them.
I'm super happy.
But Quinta Brunson is not back, and I thought she was the funniest part of the show. So she didn't come back this season, so I'm curious as to where they go from here. But
I'm curious as to why she didn't come back.
I think she has something of her own in the works.
Okay, God bless.
But the outtakes when the credits were running were much funnier than the actual show
joints. Yeah,
for the season premiere. So
I'm geeked up too because my shit is coming back. Master of None.
But this season is
Lena wrote this season.
Yeah, because she co-wrote the the last season too, but this season is about her character, Denise.
Did she co-write the entire last season, or no, did she write the?
Oh no, she wrote her episode.
She was in the writers' room. No, but she was in the writers' room for the whole season.
Okay.
But I just don't know how much she contributed outside of her own character.
I mean, I definitely think she wrote on it. I just didn't know if she would have been labeled co-writer for the entire season.
It was but more it's like fine. One of the writers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Aziz in this season at all? Or no,
he's in it, but like this he's playing as like a friend. I don't know how much it's going to be focused on his life, like because I saw a clip when they're because they're besties on the show. He's directing the show, and it's about Denise's arc with her current love interest, which I was like this sad about because I liked her love interest on the last show.
It's been
the last season, right?
I don't even remember the last season.
Yeah, she was a slim, pretty black girl. She was with
her. Can I just say that is one of my biggest issues with not just streaming, but also with regular television. These gaps that they take, these breaks that they take are so massive.
Yeah.
I just check out. So regular TV will do that shit from like, basically you'll get like your last episode on like Thanksgiving, like that week before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And then niggas don't come back until like after Martin Luther King Day. Like nigga, like our whole world done changed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm like? It's just so, and then even with this, like Masters of None, last episode was what?
A couple years ago.
That shit has been like 3 years.
I think it's been 4 years.
Yeah. And by the time Atlanta comes back, Atlanta ain't even shot yet. So by the time Atlanta comes
back, I'm good.
Atlanta's last season for me, I was like, this is not for me. I don't know if I'm even returning if it comes back.
And honestly, Lakeith and what's his name?
Both Paperboy.
And Paperboy, but all of them have, their careers have shot up.
Yeah, Brian Tyree, and obviously Donald Glover.
This is the last season. Who knows when they're going to do this joint? And my guess is that it will be the last season whenever they do come back.
I'm good. And this is, God bless, you got too much work. These are good problems to have, my nigga, right?
I am not mad.
I am not hating. Go forth and prosper. But in terms of me watching this shit, in terms of me being engaged in this shit, like, I don't want to, and I'm not really interested. Like, you fucking been off the air for, like, dude, like, you know how much has changed since fucking 2019? Yeah,
it wasn't even no pandemic or nothing back when they was on.
I mean, like...
Yeah.
The whole world has shifted.
I am very much looking forward to the Handmaid's Tale returning.
Yeah, the Handmaid's tomorrow. Tale tomorrow.
I
can't wait.
I'm actually excited that I didn't know until like the other day, because I hate when something like is coming back and it's coming back in like 3 months. No, I'm ready for that.
They've been doing promos for this since like November.
I ain't see that shit until Sunday. But I haven't really been watching network television like that either though. But I also am, like, it was really hard to watch The Handmaid's Tale during the Trump administration because it was way too
close.
Because the last season they focused a lot on how they got, the last two seasons kind of told you how they got to that point, right? Mm. And the fight to kind of try to get out of that, and but also like at the same time as they're trying to get out of it, the people are trying to what's his name? The general, I forgot everybody's name, but you know who I'm talking about. All the people of Gideon are trying to expand the Gideon program to the rest of the country and trying to pitch it to everybody else. And I was just like, it's too easy. It's too easy to see how, because that's how it started with them. People would be like, well, let's not panic. Yeah, your bank account's frozen. Don't worry about it. Yeah, no, you need to leave work. Don't worry about it. Yeah, if you bring your son into the hospital with a fever, we might send you to jail for being a bad mom. But let's just stay calm until we see what's gonna happen. And just like seeing that by degrees, and I was like, yeah, it's too easy to see how
this shit could happen for real. Yeah,
for real, especially if that's literally how people were reacting to Trump. And then when I was like, yo, if this motherfucker wins another election, we're never having another regular election. They're like, oh, you're overreacting. Yeah, okay, you know, like that type shit. So I'm relieved to be able to go back to kind of watch it and be entertained instead of watch it and be like
this shit could really happen tomorrow. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What's crazy about that is the book was written in 1985.
Right.
So
they saw it coming.
And it's so timely for today.
Yeah.
So very.
But anyway, I'm excited. I might take a nap and wake up at midnight and catch
All right. Real quick, just wanted to mention, because it was just a fun watch, versus Method Man, Redman.
That was my favorite versus.
Yeah, it was just a fun
watch. First of all, I was high, but it was my favorite. It was so much fun.
Yeah, but Reggie and Meth, like, they're literally meant to be together. Like, they just, their chemistry is, it's amazing for two guys who didn't grow up together, didn't meet each other until they started, like, rapping on Def Jam. Like, it's the way they moved, it's crazy. They're literally like two pieces of the same pie.
They're like hip hop's Abbott and Costello.
They match perfectly. Everything about them is perfect. They both have taken good care of themselves. Reggie's all like, I think Reggie's a vegan now. He's like really slim and trim.
It kind of surprises me how healthy and coherent Red is.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't, but it does.
Meth, you could tell Meth has been heavy in the gym. He's an athlete in his
own right.
God bless.
All right, I'll give y'all 3 seconds of this cream over Meth, man. Go ahead now.
That it don't make no sense why that man needs
25 minutes.
I don't understand.
You said 25 minutes. Look, it can start. Just stand up in the sky.
Meth Man since 1994. Like, I just, yeah.
Yeah, so they look great and they sound great, and they, like you said, there was a great show when they brought Keith Murray out.
It's like a whole Def Squad show.
Yeah, they brought out K-Solo shit, and they brought out
EPMD
out, which is incredible. The EPMD deserves a versus, I believe, at some point.
Yeah.
It was great to see them together, and it was, and again, and those guys are just, they're funny, so they work together, and they just, it was just a good time. It was a really good time. I enjoyed it. And I actually had forgotten about a lot of those records.
Yeah.
Like, I had forgotten about the library because they had together. I was like, oh, I forgot. Yeah. This shit was hot. Yeah. So it was good. That was just a good one.
Even the breaks, like, Scratch would just be like off playing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, they were just jamming.
They just had a good time. And we got Escape and SWV coming up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see how that goes.
And I don't know if they revealed the rest of let me look and see, because they had a bunch of other stuff on schedule that they didn't.
Yeah, I didn't see any of the other reveals, but I definitely enjoyed Reggie and Meth. Let's talk about Inca. You watch anything? Any own stuff? Matt, you watch Ready to Love?
I did. I'm not
caught up.
I think I watched the first three of Ready to Love. I watched the first one of Fix My Life.
Okay.
And I really think Iyanla just be making shit up as she goes along.
She's a high priestess now. Don't.
What the hell was with those lemons?
She's not a licensed.
Oh, the lemons. Yeah, the lemons was she was showing that, you know, you got to make lemonade. When you got a lot of lemons, you got to.
Where did the lemonade happen? Carrying lemons for no reason.
Well, because she wanted you to know that eventually you're going to have to make some lemonade out of it.
They had real problems, and she gave that woman a makeover.
They had real problems. You know what was interesting about that couple? And for those who didn't watch the show, there was a black couple. I think the guy was 47. The woman was like 35. They had been married for a while. He had mad kids before they got married.
And they had 11 children together.
11, yeah.
Altogether.
She had two, I think, before him. And he had like four or five. And then they had two together.
He had like seven. Or something like that, yes, six or
yes,
seven.
Yes.
And they have two together, and then. Yeah.
And she had two before him. He had seven before her, and then he had two together. Yes. So there's a lot
they
of kids.
They work on their marriage, though.
They had to work on their marriage, and they had a business together, and she didn't trust them. And she had went through, they both have gotten to that phase where, like, you know, she don't really, you know, get dressed much, and you know, hair's not done, and looking like a, you know, but he ain't much better. I'm not trying to dog her. He, you know,
but like they have 11 kids.
They got 11 kids. All 11 kids don't live with them, but still,
I'm not wearing lipstick if there's five kids in the house. I'm just not.
Come on, Inca, throw on a little lip gloss on me for nothing. Some little eyeshadow or some shit. But anyway,
they didn't know who each other were. How you move in with somebody 3 months after you meet them and you already have seven children. That's a huge red flag.
And then got married 3 months after that.
He was homeless and didn't want to tell you that. That's
he was a homosexual. But you know what's interesting about that couple? We'll move on because we don't spend a lot of time on it. But that couple was so indignant. And I always say from the black side, because I don't know, and I don't even know if this is a good thing or not, but I don't know enough white people to know if this also attributes to them. But on the black side, we all know that couple. Like, they've been together forever. You know,
white people do that shit too.
They kind of like, they together. They know, but they just there. And there's no spark. And there's just, but you know, but ain't nobody going nowhere. And you know, and they come over and they cool and they play cards, have a good time. But you know, you can see this, it ain't really popping. Like, it was just very interesting.
It's convenient.
It wasn't like they was cursing and yelling at each other. It wasn't that. Fuck you, nigga. It wasn't that. It was just the kind of like, well, we got all these damn kids, so I guess we're just going to ride this thing out.
Yeah, he don't want to come home. And
yeah, exactly.
All that, yeah.
Exactly. You come home, you just talking about kid shit. Like, what you got any mac and cheese left? He ate the last of it? Shit. You make me a sandwich?
This is literally the whole conversation.
Ridiculous.
I want to mention, you know what I want to mention real quick? Kyrie Irving. Bro, you been following everything with him?
No, I don't follow.
I knew that was going to be anytime Sean said that.
You know, I don't really, again, I know I sound like a grumpy old man, and God bless him, but Kyrie is on his journey.
Yes.
And I'm not very interested in him. Like, I don't really look at him, because to me, the other thing is too, like, they're like, he's like a kid to me.
Yeah, he's 27. I say this
with no disrespect. I say this with no disrespect. I don't really follow him in that way.
I got you.
If the game is on, I'm gonna watch the game, but I'm not necessarily interested in them in the way I was, you know, maybe interested in other athletes. They're just not interesting to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know that he put in for some PTO.
Mm.
nigga basically was like, I'm gonna need to use 5 of these days. And I'm out.
I got some
and
shit
I'll
to
be
do.
Back. And let me tell you, I don't necessarily disagree with Kyrie in that way.
Yeah, but that's what I was trying to get into.
I think oftentimes there's some things I like and some things I don't necessarily like. I recognize that the things that I don't like about him are very generational and very to things that I would do, right? So I say that to couch it as he is not doing anything wrong.
Mm.
But Kyrie is really a microcosm of this particular generation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is like, you're not going to overwork them. You're not going to guilt them. You're not going to make them feel bad for expressing themselves. You're not going to make them feel any type of way about anything. Like Kyrie is like, look, man, I don't fucking want to be here. And you know what? You know what? You get to do that when you're talented. When you're an exceptional talent, you get to talk a little shit, and you can walk your walk and you can talk your talk, right? Because you know what? If he doesn't come to practice for the next 3 days, he doesn't play in the next 3 games, guess what? You're going to throw him out there, and he's going to give you 27-8, and y'all going to win by 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Now, if you can go out there, if you can give me 27-8, and we win by 5, you too could take some PTO. Until then, rest of you niggas,
you
get your ass
on
that training table, okay? That's the other thing. Like, they'll, you know, in our day, we'll be like, oh, you know, it's only a sore ankle. Why is he not playing? Because he don't fucking want to play. And and that is, and you know what? I'm taking my fucking sick time. I'm not rushing back. I don't give a fuck about, like, Kyrie definitely strikes me as a dude, and a lot of people say this, like, hey, I can walk away from the game.
Absolutely.
But he, I kind of think he can absolutely just walk away from, and be happy is what I mean.
Yeah. Like if Kyrie, if this season ends, however it ends, and, you know, winning or not, like, if he gets a chip, great. If he doesn't, great. And I hear, like, next August, yo, Kyrie say he ain't gonna play this year. I'd be like, yeah, I see that.
That's very on brand.
That sounds about right. Yeah, he's actually having. I mean, he's definitely having. I love actually just for playing. Like I love watching. He's such a wizard, literally with the basketball and the way he can put the ball up on angles. It's stunning to see. Like he's fucking ridiculous. Like
I was gonna ask, is Kyrie's attitude also indicative of this kind of like you know, for the last I guess about 10 years or so, we've seen players switch teams so much, and instead of there being like franchise players, which I'm mm-hmm. which I'm more used to, is it more indicative of that, the way like Sean kind of said, this generation bounces around to jobs and companies more? It seems like players, basketball players, take that same situation. It's like, I'm not necessarily going to be here, but for 3-4 years.
He and a lot of players in his generation have definitely come into the NBA and probably NFL too, with like, I ain't got no allegiance to none of these teams. Whereas before it was like, yeah, I'm going to be a Boston Celtic for the rest of my career. He's like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. Like, who, if somebody offers me a better situation, and especially this situation, because he wanted to come back. He's from Jersey originally. He's from, I think, Elizabeth.
He's from right in town, dude. I see his pops and.
Oh, he's from Montclair. He's over there. Oh, what's
the one? Okay. He went to the same middle school as the kids, man.
Oh shit! Okay, so yeah, he wanted to.
He actually signed his deal at the middle school. That's wow. When he signed his last deal. Yeah,
and his pops is from Brooklyn, right?
I think his pops is from Brooklyn, but again, they were based in they kind of grew up in this area
out this way, yeah. So he wanted to come back to be closer to his family. He's very close, very very close to his father. He has a sister. He's very very close to. I don't know if his mom is around or not, but yeah, he's such a wizard with the basketball. But Kyrie, even in college, he went to Duke. He played 9 games. He never played again. He had gotten hurt, and he basically was like, eh, for what? I'm Gucci. So, and he came out, obviously, he was a top 10 pick to Cleveland at that point. And, you know, he got a chip with LeBron. He went to Boston. That didn't work out. But you know what's interesting about Kyrie is, like, the players like, he's liked in the league. Like, he's not like he's like, oh, fuck that nigga. You know, he's very well-liked within the league. Like, people like him, but he's a very inquisitive kid. He's very just, like, looking for other things. He just happens to be a savant with basketball, but he has other interests. And now last week he came out that he converted to Islam. Nobody knew that, which I think is might have been.
Oh, yeah. Because if somebody asked him about if he was fasting Ramadan, yeah.
Yes. And he came out. Yeah. So that's the other thing. He's fasting and still playing. And he just has these other interests. And he's just a very interesting guy. But I've seen other like reporters and stuff. Like there's a woman, Jackie McMullen, who's like a big Boston sports writer. And she's like, I love him. Like, he's great. Like, he's a thoughtful interview. Like, he's very respectful.
He makes their job very easy.
Yes, he does.
Right? He makes their job very easy. And they always will tell you that they rather have engaging interviews than a big star who's like a fucking bump on the log.
Yeah,
right?
With the same answers and questions, yeah.
But this is what you're going to get moving forward. Okay?
Yeah,
it's not going to be, you know, these talented young men and young women.
And women.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to fucking pressure them and put this enormous amount of pressure on them and give them anxiety and make them feel all sorts of weird and all sorts mm-hmm. of ways. And again, he's going through his enlightenment or whatever this period of his life is. And I think that there are plenty of basketball players who experience that and who are inquisitive and who have other interests. I just don't think we often see it with someone at that talent level.
At that level,
right?
Yeah.
At that extreme level of talent. Yeah, sure, you know, hey, I played in the league for 10 years and I averaged 12 points a game. Like, yeah, I mean, okay, you had other interests. You became an artist.
That's not an interesting story.
It's not, that's not, you know, like, it's a fucking multi all-star, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
The Hall of Fame conversation caliber type of player.
Yeah.
They're usually singularly focused. Mm-hmm. And so,
Trevor Lawrence, who is going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, which is coming, I think, next week. Quarterback from Clemson, won a national championship, lost another national championship. And they asked him last a couple weeks ago, And he's a white kid from Georgia, you know, big, tall, good-looking white kid. And he was like, yeah, football don't ruin my life. I could walk away tomorrow and not be tripping. And the press was like, oh, how could he say that? It's like, because, like you said, Sean, this is that generation. He's like...
And they and here's another thing, and I don't want to belabor this, but, like, these dudes did not grow up with this sort of abject poverty that we often... True. Connect right. with athletes.
True.
And this is my only way out. And I yeah. can only, like, they grew up in really nice, solid middle class cribs.
Had heat in the winter.
had their own room.
Uh-huh.
Okay. They had video games. They
yep,
had
their
cousins to come by. Okay. Like, ain't nobody missing no meals.
Yeah. So you said, I got to get mama out of this. You're like, nah, yeah, mama.
Yeah, like, nigga, we got a vacation home on Myrtle Beach. Nigga.
Exactly.
We went to
Martha's Vineyard every summer. You know, I want to mention the Oscars. I didn't watch, actually. Did any of y'all watch?
I did. I watched most of it.
Some of it.
Okay. I watched none of it. But I was so excited to not only see Daniel Kaluuya win and mm-hmm. watch video of his speech and him embarrassing his mom and watching him linking up with Fred Hampton Jr. at an after party and the emotion and the hug that they had together.
Which I want to know. All of the goddamn ADO West and first whatever the fuck black people, everybody who's hating on Brits playing American blacks, the Fred Hampton's family fully co-signed
mm-hmm.
Daniel playing Fred.
Absolutely,
Hampton. I think that's so key.
I remember Daniel reading, seeing our interview rather where Daniel said like he went and sat with the mom and yeah. Fred Hampton Jr. and they grilled his ass for several hours.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
like no 15 minutes or we had lunch and we kicked it. It was like, yo, nigga, like what you think about this? What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. Like they really. Took him through it to get him, you know, to get that cosign. And I also loved, there was a video of Daniel, the rapper Dave from England, mm-hmm. the kid who plays the lead of Snowfall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another kid, there's four of them. They like this British.
Oh, they were in LA pre-Oscars.
Yeah, it was like LA on Sunset. On yeah. Sunset, just kicking it. Like, yeah, nigga, we the DDS crew, the dark skin.
The dark skin.
Hanging out with. And then that night, I saw a clip. I guess they went to Daniel's room. He had the Oscar. And it was all.
And they were hyping him up.
Hyping him up. Like, yeah, nigga. Yeah. Yeah. So it was this amazing. I love that to see those, the black Brit clicks, kids clicked up like that. And, you know, they basically took Hollywood over.
And I want to also give a shout out, even though she hasn't been on the show in ages, but our still our foreign correspondent.
Christiana
Mbakwe. Daniel is a good friend of hers. He was actually in her wedding.
We talked yesterday about that. And it's about, like, you know, because she knows all those guys. And she was just like, yeah, it's incredible.
Also, you know.
One more quick thing. Okay. And peace to Adele, the goddess Adele, who was at the only white person at that party. The after party.
Right.
The only white person at the party with her black Brit friends popping. So just peace to Adele. I think we're gonna get a record with her in like Future on the next album. So.
Oh Lord. I wanna give a shout out to friends of the show, like early. Jeff was on early, Jeff Robinson of mm-hmm. the Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Her Tacombe best original song.
Yeah, her and Tierra.
Yeah, and they also won best. What, Song of the Year? They won Song of the Year at the Grammys, I think?
Yeah.
So, and I really want to shout Jeff out. I sent this to him, and I know that he probably wouldn't necessarily acknowledge it because it's kind of messy, but Jeff, you know, was Alicia Keys' manager who took her to Heights, and mm-hmm. when she left him, inside the industry was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, somebody put the Make Another Hove challenge on Jeff.
Yeah.
And
he did.
Bodied it. Like.
And he did.
Beyond. Mm-hmm. Like, beyond. Be fucking mm-hmm. on. So he was on Clubhouse last night. He did like a little praise and worship room.
Oh, did he?
To give thanks, which I thought was very sweet. Played some gospel songs and just talked about how grateful he was. And
also, like, just for in general, overall, like, again, her, Gabby Wilson, her, is this international superstar now, well deserved, she's super talented, but like just been with her since she was like 12.
Right.
So this didn't happen overnight. It was a long process of work. So like,
I just development. Exactly. Somebody calls her an industry plant. And I was like, y'all nuggets are
that's
so stupid.
That's stupid. That's
her,
stupid.
Her path was crazy linear, but it also like, it was so much
work. It took a long time. It took a long time.
So much work. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to say like, don't see what you see now and think like it just popped off in 2018. Because it was way before that, where he was getting door slammed in her face with her, pardon the pun. And now, obviously, they're at this level. But anyway, so what did y'all think about the show in general? For what you saw?
It was another kind of like supper club type situation. People at tables, small amounts of people.
Like the Grammys was.
Like the Grammys was. And I kind of like it. I kind of like the more intimate vibe. It takes some of the big, you know, flash and production elements out of it, but I don't know that we need all that. You know what I mean? But I know some people don't like it. I think they don't find it as entertaining because it's not as flashy. You're not going to see as many celebrities.
I like the flash.
Audience and all of that. But I think that live production award shows have been.
Oh, by the way, Jesse Collins again.
Oh, for two.
Jesse did this too.
Yeah, Jesse did this production. Jesse Collins.
Did the Grammys.
And Jesse Collins has had like the greatest pandemic ever. Jesse's been outstanding because most of these award shows that I've been looking at have been like, this is really well done. It's been Jesse, right? And Quest on as Music Soup.
Mm-hmm.
And Lil Rel. It's so funny to me that Lil Rel is like always Quest's like sidekick in this shit, but like Jesse's sidekick, like Lil Rel involved in certain skits and stuff. And somebody told me they saw Dream's name in the credits as a writer. There was a lot of blackness this year. Even though Chadwick did not get
Benefactor,
which was trash. And even Sean Connery,
it was so trash.
And it's almost like they say that usually Best Picture is last, and this year Best Actor was last. It's almost like they knew this shit was fucked up, so they're like, we're gonna put this shit last. But in terms of from just a production standpoint, I've actually enjoyed kind of watching the adaptation. And maybe that's the project manager in me who likes to see how people come up with creative solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I've enjoyed kind of watching the pivot and what comes out of it. I hated everybody's look this year except Angela Bassett and Regina King, though. I hated everybody's outfits.
You didn't like Viola?
No, white? I didn't like that dress.
It was the wrong color.
And even I think the white could have worked if it didn't look so padded. It looked like a dress that you get off the rack at a bridal boutique. Like the boobs look padded, and then it flared after the. It was just weird. It didn't flatter her at all, and she's not carrying that. She's not carrying that weight anymore from.
From Ma Rainey.
So I thought it made her look heavy. And I just did not think it was flattering at all. The white could have been very beautiful. It wasn't about it being white. It was something about like the brocade detail and the.
I think it was just too much.
It was a sweetheart neck. It was just it wasn't.
And then she had like a mohawk. It was
like it came from David's Bridal. I didn't like it at all. But
I don't know how to say this because I don't, you know, especially as a dude, I don't want to be like criticizing women, but like. With the Halle Berry thing. What was happening? I didn't like her hair.
I think it was just hair. If it was black, it would have been stunning. But I think the light blondie thing, it just kind of washed her out.
Threw it off.
Dusty rose dress. It just didn't work.
It was going for a pixie. It didn't really work. I thought that Andra, even though Andra looks amazing, you know, she lost 30-something pounds to play Billy.
I think she looked a little cheap in the dress.
Yeah, the dress looked off the rack, as Zendaya's. And Zendaya usually gives you a lot. And I'm wondering if part of it was like, well, you know, it's a different type of award season. We're going to take the opportunity to not go so
hard.
Fell at a ball. But it felt very like 90s prom.
I thought Zendaya looked nice because she always looks nice and she has the body to carry a lot of stuff. But by the same token, I did see the red carpet people, which was Nina Parker, that guy Karamo, the guy with the glasses, that's a stylist too. He had a show for a little while, white guy, and I can't remember his name, damn. But anyway, they were like trying to force it, like, nah, nah, look at what I'm. And I was like, okay, she looked good, but y'all acting like this is the best shit you ever seen.
Like you said, she looked good because she always has a presence.
But it wasn't like, yo, she bodied it. You know what I'm saying?
Go ahead, Inka. You trying to jump in. You on mute.
Go ahead, babe.
I think Zendaya always turns a look. Like, that's how she'll say herself her career got jump started, because she would just go to the red carpets. I think what I believe is that we didn't know we were going to have an in-person Oscars until very late. Mm. And a lot of looks, they plan out 6 months in advance. So right. I think they just didn't have time to look as flawless and stunning and custom and haute couture. They were kind of
scrambling.
Yeah, yeah. But
Layman and Micah, who styles Regina King and a few other people, won the night.
For sure. Regina.
And Angela Bassett looked fucking incredible. Like, they
She did. I think Lakeith looked a fool, but only he could wear something like that.
That's Lakeith, though. That's cousin Lakeith. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah.
Also, niggas ain't spending all that bread on these stylists. I mean, all right. But like sometimes the answer is just be like sitting right in front of us, right? Like, mm-hmm. like stylists cost money. Like that shit is a process, right? And mm-hmm. for women particularly, it's a huge process. So yeah, man. Team. Like I gotta do all this shit. And you know, for a lot of them, they probably didn't get the support from movie houses or from agencies to back end and fund that, right? Because the campaigns are very different now.
True.
Like, yo, man, do a red carpet, right? You might, yo, man, like, if your shit isn't borrowed, you're looking at like 15 grand, maybe.
Yeah, easy.
You know what I'm saying?
And that's
15
that's
grand. Now, if your shit is borrowed, if your shit is borrowed, you might be looking at $7,500.
Mm-hmm. You still might be looking at 10 because you're still looking at Taylor. You're still looking at the cost of an actual, like,
I'm being conservative.
That kind of thing, yeah. It's a lot of money. Even when, like you said, even when the clothes are borrowed, they're still tailored. They're still altered.
And guess what? They clearly make a lot of money. But last time I checked, motherfucker, 10 grand, okay, it's 10 grand.
Ain't nobody walking past it.
And when shit ain't coming in, and it's all going out, my nigga, 10 grand is 10 grand.
Exactly, okay? Exactly. So let's figure something
out. Honorable mention.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Honorable mention to Aldis Hodges, fine ass. He was my best dressed man.
Yep, that's Wayman and Micah,
for
too.
Sure.
Same style as
Regina. So, so I can just say this: that nigga can hang a suit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yo,
because he's the tailor. He's the perfect line of, like, he's got the athletic build, but he's not too bulky.
Yes,
like, but he still got the build.
But what I love, what I really love about his suits and how they fit is that they are right between that modern and Euro look. So they're clearly tailored and fitted, but it's not that tight. Weird shit where, like, it's not too tight where it looks like he's going to bust his pants open and shit. And
yeah. Like, it ain't like Martell.
Like, all y'all niggas who've been wearing your shit too tight, like that dude on the group went viral a couple of weeks ago on Instagram because he literally, like, if he flexed his arms,
he can't breathe.
Fuck open. Like, that's what you think you look like. You don't, but that's what they think they look like. You can feel when your shit is too tight. Like, I don't understand that.
It's not comfortable.
Well, I can tell you. This is the difference for men, particularly. This is the difference between going to a tailor, who is also more of a consultant, who understands the fit that you're looking for, mm-hmm. versus taking your shit to like a dry cleaner,
to the cleaner,
who will do what you tell them to do.
Yeah.
Right? They do what you tell them to do. A tailor is going to say,
nah,
not for you, my nigga.
Yeah.
Relax. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? My dude has definitely told me, no.
Yeah, yeah, nah. We're not doing that.
Too wise for that.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Yeah. We're going to do this other thing, and you're going to be right.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime you get a hesitancy,
yeah,
listen to him.
Yeah, go on, get one of them lollipops over there while I take this tape measure out.
Not a lollipop. I got one other mention from the Oscars, though, and that is a piece to Jameika Wilson and Mia Neal for winning for hair and makeup for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Because the whole time I'm watching that movie, I was looking at the progression of everybody's hair and makeup and how it was hot as shit in that building. And by the end, everybody's face had melted. It was, it was
sweaty.
Really, really perfectly well done. So peace to them. They deserved that for sure.
Yeah. I wanted to say peace to, I did see the Ricky Gervais speech, which was, you know, brutal as usual. That's just what he do, tear everybody up in the room. And then peace to the Korean woman for, is it Marnie? Who won. And who won and was like, Brad Pitt.
Like,
where were you at when we was filming? And but people didn't catch it. People didn't understand like what she was saying. Brad Pitt produced the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plan B is his shit. And he produced the movie.
Different name.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was just like, nigga, like, why you ain't come to set? Nigga, like, we was fucking dying out there. You know what I'm saying? You ain't come around, you know. But yeah. So, I mean, I didn't watch it. I saw clips. So I felt like I saw enough. I wanted to mention this one little quick thing, bro. I know because I saw it on your timeline actually, and it seemed like it caused a little bit of a spark all day. Which was there was a woman in a gym, some gym, a public gym, and she was trying to do, you know, poses and shit or do exercise. I guess she posts on Instagram, and she's staring in the mirror against the camera. Where I guess she has a camera set up by the weights, and there's a white guy who comes into the screen to get weights or whatever, and he walks back out, and he comes back in because I guess he figured out what he wanted to do, and she posts something like, why does he keep coming in and out the frame? I'm paraphrasing, but why does he keep coming out the frame when, you know, when I'm trying to film? And this caused the whole thing because everybody was like, a lot of people were like, and I agreed, was like, it was a public gym. You said your house?
You ain't in a fucking studio.
Yeah, I think she definitely tried to spin it because it was a white guy coming in. I think that she thought she was going to get a lot more like, yeah, he was hating on you. But you can see the white guy didn't even know she was filming. He's just working out. Go ahead, bro.
So, a couple things. One, I when I say I hate that shit with a passion, I hate that taping in the gym shit with a passion. And here's why. Mm-hmm. One, it's wildly invasive, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's like, what I said. You invaded his privacy.
Like I feel like when I go to the gym, I should not have to be concerned as to whether or not I'm on someone's live or not. Or I'm in someone's shot, right? Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be in anyone's shot. Your fucking phone should be away. Okay. Now, if you want to take a picture of yourself, that's fine, right? Like, obviously, no one's saying that. But also, what I was noticing was that this is a part of current gym culture, which is every single thing is for the gram. Mm-hmm. Every time I go to the gym is for the gram. Now, listen, if you make your living by with these posts, normally the people who do that are also doing that in gyms that they either own, they have rented. They go during off-peak times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a trainer's gym or a space, mm-hmm. right? It's not just a regular-ass gym. And it was wild because I went into the comments and one chick was like, yeah, clearly he could see she got a tripod set up. I'm like, nigga, you know that that's not making it better.
Right.
Like you put a tripod into the gym, that's nuts.
So I deleted the question because I really wanted to ask her, like, yo, are people really like setting up tripods in a fucking gym?
That's crazy.
Like, it's just so it was wild because it was so inconsiderate, right? And what I mean by that is like, not only are you invading other people's space, right? But the fact that you think that you have the right to dictate where the fuck somebody should be walking and moving during their workout.
Exactly.
Like, hit your weights, okay, and get the fuck out. Exactly. Like, this is, and what I've noticed is, you know, it varies from gym to gym. If I go to certain gyms, I'll see this way more often than not. And if I go to other gyms, I really don't see this at all. You know, this is one of the reasons why I stopped fucking with a lot of gyms and I'll just work out at home because between that, between the guy using fucking, got eight dumbbells out. Like, you're not using eight dumbbells.
Nigga, that nigga there. I hate that.
You got
that
eight dumbbells and two benches.
Yeah, like, nigga.
Like, first of all, nigga, you're 275, okay, with no muscle definition, and you got titties. You need to be... You need to stop eating that fried chicken and get your ass on that treadmill.
Going to Taco Bell after the gym.
Yeah, before you fuck around and pop something. Okay,
get the pizza and play the fitness.
It really, like, it's always like this extra guy. It's either that some extreme guy. It's like, yo, man, like, you're not even like, I like, clearly this is not really what you do, and you could tell it's not what they do. And
the yelling nigga, I hate the yelling nigga too.
The yelling, slamming the weights, slamming the weights, like, nigga, that, like, nigga, fucking you asshole. Got, and that, and also, and this is one of the reasons why when I go to the gym, when I would go to the gym, I would always wear earmuff headphones. I did not like AirPods.
The noise canceling shits.
Mm-hmm. I would put them big ass headphones on and I would put my hood on because these niggas will try to hunt you. Hey, big man, let me get a spot.
No, nigga.
No, nigga. Control your weight. If you need somebody to help you in the gym to control the weight, it's too much fucking weight, okay?
Exactly.
Go down and wait.
Yeah, exactly. And you cutting into my time, nigga. Like, I'm on spot.
And more importantly, nigga, you don't even know if I can lift that.
Exactly.
That shit will come crashing down on your chest. You just asking a random motherfucker, yo, can you spot me?
Exactly.
Nigga, you don't know me. That shit have caved your chest in.
And then you'll be the bad guy. Fuck out of here. You fuck out of here.
You can't set up a tripod in front of
crazy
a dumbbell rack and not expect anybody to walk.
And then get an attitude.
See, that definitely doesn't work. This was one of those times she definitely thought it was going to be one way, but it was the other way.
And it was totally the other.
Yeah, I'm more worried about creepy niggas with cameras than that's, your so, shot. Like, take a corner, sis.
That's the other part that actually freaks me out. It just weirds. It just really feels invasive.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't express that enough. Like, and I've actually seen a guy at one of the nicer gyms that I was a member at. He had like a suction or some shit where he could like put the phone on the wall and put like the like something that goes onto the back of the phone and you could put it on and he's like taping his workouts and shit like that. Like the people came over and was like, yo, like, bro, you can't do that, man. Like, there is an understanding of privacy. Like, people should feel like they can go in here and work out and not feel like somebody's fucking snapping pics or you know what I'm saying?
Nigga might be working out with a side piece. Nigga, wifey ain't supposed to know you.
Nigga might not supposed to be here.
Exactly. Now you're going to put my shit on Facebook. Now I got problems at home.
Now Bernice done called Gladys.
Exactly. Charlene done got my shit
on. Hello, Barbara. This is Shirley.
Yeah, my shit on the lawn because of your dumbass popping the phone on the wall, nigga. Shit. I really want to mention Invincible. You ain't watching this shit. This show
is so good. I love this
fucking
shit.
Incredible. How many episodes, Redica?
Seven.
Yeah, it's just incredible. That's all I can say. You got to watch shit popping. And let's end it with because I know Naima, I know you was involved with this with DMX's Homegoing Services, which kind of went left.
That was the black, but it was on brand.
It was on brand. Those niggas do what they do.
It was on brand.
X had two.
A memorial and then a funeral.
Yeah, memorial and a funeral. Hold on a sec.
And I think what it really... I'll do this with Jeff while he's adjusting, whatever the hell. I think, if I had to guess, I think what we saw happen was one service that was planned by the Rough Riders family and one service that was planned by Miss Arnett, who was DMX's mom.
Okay.
And
And so, and A.R. Bernard, correct?
At the, it was at CCC, yeah.
At CCC,
with
yeah.
A.R. Bernard, yeah.
That was Sunday. Saturday was
at Memorial Barclays. Was at Barclays on
yeah,
Saturday.
I know they were trying to do something at Yonkers Raceway at one point. I guess they couldn't figure that out, which is why I ended up, maybe this wasn't big enough. I don't know, but it was why I ended up at Barclay and CCC after.
And the one at Barclay was produced by Kanye. All the visuals, the set, the staging was produced by Kanye.
I didn't know that. I knew his choir was there, but I didn't know he was involved with the whole.
Yeah, the whole visual scenario.
So they were close.
I don't know. I mean, you know,
maybe just wanted to participate.
Well, they were label mates, and X also was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Oh, okay.
And you know, X had also been part of Sunday Service.
Yes.
When X came to Sunday Service, was the first time there was more than just like music at Sunday Service. Because X was me and X, and he was praying. So I think there was I don't know if they would have been like, yo, we best friends, but there was definitely
a mutual respect for sure.
Yeah, I think there was love there. You know what I mean? There was definitely love there. And I think that, you know, as Ye was on his journey, he probably looked to X, his spiritual journey. He probably looked to X for some insight, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But the disparity between the two is very stark. Like, Saturday was the more star-studded event, really. You had Nas there. You had the entire Rough Riders group there, including Eve. You had, again, the Sunday Service Choir performing, and you had a bunch of people in the building. Whereas Sunday, it was like random people singing. I still don't really know what the connections were there. And, you know, like Lior sent like a voice note. Russ sent this really wild video message.
Yeah, Russell.
That rambled, and where he talked about how he used to freebase and like, I know y'all probably thinking, why this nigga ain't do nothing? Why you ain't do nothing? Like, it was just like the most ridiculous funeral message. And then Kevin Lyles had to come in at the end and kind of clean it all up. But it was, so Sheik said at the Saturday service, when the Locks were talking about X, who brought them to Rough Riders after they left Bad Boy, and who they had a relationship with prior.
From Yonkers.
From Yonkers, and X was on Money, Power, and Respect.
Mm-hmm.
That he was like, X was the most ghetto person ever, but he meant it in love, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, he was the most ghetto, and I think what he meant was more like, you know, X's connection to the street, to his roots, to whatever. But that funeral on Sunday was the most ghetto funeral I've ever seen. First of all, from the runtime, that funeral was supposed to be, a lot of people have asked me, they missed me at the top of the show. I was on like the top 15 minutes because we didn't want to cut into the program too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ran pretty tight. People just talked too long.
Did it start on time?
It started on time.
The Saturday was like
hours late. I think there was some infighting. Saturday was like hours late. It started on time and it ran pretty tight, but people just went long, right? Like, people were supposed to limit comments to 3 minutes. We knew that wasn't gonna happen from the door.
3 minutes?
The service was supposed to be 2.5 hours long. The service was over 4 hours long. And concluded with somebody trying to bum rush the pulpit. Yeah.
Jungle.
Trying to bum rush the pulpit only to get sufficiently shut down in Jesus' name by A.R. Bernard. Which I really appreciated.
That was crazy.
But Jungle decided he had something on his heart. And he wasn't even trying to just get up there and say something real quick. This nigga was like, I got a story.
Yeah.
Like, I got a story to tell. And was clearly inebriated. But then even like Tashira, DMX's ex-wife, gave like this whole chronicle of their love story.
Brought up the current girlfriend and they hugged and all that.
But I was wondering until that moment, because I knew Desiree was supposed to come after her. I was like, how do you follow this shit?
Mm-hmm.
Because she was literally like I was on assignment from God to be in Earl's life and take him on a journey and da 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 da. And I'm just like, if I'm Desiree and I'm sitting listening to this shit, like, what am I supposed to say after that? You know,
I'm good.
I will also be on fire, like, girl.
Yeah,
what?
Like, the beginning,
because he ain't been with you in years.
In years, and she, you know, the beginning was cool. And then even in, like at the end, she was trying to let people know that her and X were good. But the way she phrased it, she was like, we reconciled in a way I can only thank God for. And I'm like, I get that what you mean is that you guys were able to co-parent together and you mended your friendship. But like, say that? You know what I'm saying? It was just like Tashira has been very clear. And I there's no beef with her. Because I know like first wife, second wife dynamic, baby mama dynamics, it can be a lot. But Tashira has been very clear, like, I'm lead wife type shit, right? Like, even bringing all the baby mothers together on Saturday, she's like, this is what X wanted for all the baby mothers to be there. But it's like, she's the head of the baby
mother. I don't know if you really
type shit. Anyway, all the kids were there. The most interesting reflection of the day actually came from Minister Farrakhan, who gave a very Christian-centered eulogy.
And people were tripping on that, like, oh.
Muslims know, they know who Jesus is. And also.
But Mr. Farrakhan is he's like a professor of, he understands theology backwards and forwards. He's just not the Quran. He understands the Torah. Like, he's been doing this for like 70 years. Like,
anybody who is a religious leader. Yes. Somebody said, they were like, he knows an awful lot about Jesus. I was like, I would
Why wouldn't he?
If you are a religious leader, you know as much about other, and this is actually my problem with Christians. We should know what other doctrines are so we know why we believe our doctrine, right? And I had this argument with a woman in church because she was like, well, why would I ever read the Quran? I was like, how do you know you don't believe what it says if you've never read it, right?
Well, you know.
But Jesus is in the Quran, right? The us Muslims and Jesus, what I'm missing. Jewish, we're all Abrahamic religions, right? Which means that we're all considered descendants of Abraham. And a lot of the stories in our religious texts are the same. They're just small variations that are different. And, but it's not, and you know, the Muslims also call Allah God. And I think that confuses people. It's not about, it's just about Jesus being a Messiah versus a prophet. But I think one thing that kept coming up was, X as a prophet, as a everyman prophet, and we even discovered that X is a deacon, which didn't surprise me, but also kind of surprised me. Like, I'm trying to imagine X sitting front row in a black suit and like taking up the offering and shit at the end. That message kept coming up, and even his kids were like, "He's at peace. This is more than we could have given him. This is more than we could have hoped for him." Like, even though we miss him, there was no like, we wish he wasn't gone. It was kind of like, we're mourning.
He's in a better place.
But it is genuinely better that he's gone. He genuinely was still in pain, still in, you know, torment, still in whatever. And I hope people heard that, you know, because mourning is for the living. And, I doubt X even lived. I said this on air. I doubt X even thought he lived to see 50. And he made it to, you know, 50. He made it to 50. He made it to almost 51.
Yeah,
it's like, it was an interesting day. It was an interesting day. And but his obituary, oh my God, that shit mentioned every featured artist, every single, every movie and co-star. It was the most.
But you know what though, Swiss made a very poignant speech as well on stage, and one of the things he said, of the many things he said, which was, you know, get a will and get yourself in order. And
but I think is fighting with everybody else.
Exactly. Say all these things that all the service things that happened, all the chaos at both services, and like you said, it's possible that his mom is fighting with other people for money, and you know, maybe a master's or publishing or whatever.
Or just even decision making.
The decision making is because there was no will in place. Of course, DMX didn't. You know, I don't think he planned to die the way he died. So maybe he thought he had time. I don't know. I wasn't there, but a will alleviates a lot of all of this, basically.
Yeah.
When the person is telling you, legally binding, this is what I want, this is who I want, this is how I want it, yeah. This is what I want, blah, blah, blah. And it's a legal binding document that nobody can go against. So if he says he wants to be buried in a canary yellow suit,
that's what it is.
His mother can't be like, nuh-uh, he gonna wear this gray. No, ma'am. Legally binding, he wearing the canary suit. This is what he picked, and so on and so on and so on.
And I tell my friends this often. There are a lot of families, and this isn't unique to Black families, but we are especially proficient in it. There is a hesitancy to talk about what's going to happen after people die in a way that's not dramatic, in a way that's not just, you're going to be mad when I'm gone. And I have friends who don't want to broach this subject with their parents. And I keep telling them, you have to, because you have to kind of take the emotion out of it and put more of a logistics or a business hat on for a second. Because really all you're doing is just making sure that you are not left with mess. Because sometimes even when there is a will, there's mess. Like when my dad died, my dad has 4 siblings. My dad did not have a lot of money. He has 2 children and we're good. Nobody else was named in that will but his 2 children. But because, and our cousin did the will for my father, but because my uncle had been his power of attorney, my uncle somehow felt like he was supposed to be involved in the will and was fighting me over, like, I ain't seen the will. I was like, you don't need to see the will. Your name ain't in the will.
Exactly.
Like,
there's nothing for you to see.
I am the executrix of the will. This is what my father wanted. He's like, well, I'm just trying to make sure my brother's wishes are carried out. I was like, which is what I'm doing. I was like,
it's a legal binding document. So it is what it is.
So I'm like, you pressing me because you want to see the will is stupid. I was like, I'll show it to you. I ain't got a death certificate. Nigga, I ain't got a death certificate. You know what I mean? It's just like, it was all so, and that was with a will in place. And with there not being a lot of assets. So when there's no will in place and there are a lot of assets.
I can't even imagine what they're dealing with now.
Living will is important. I don't want to be hooked to machines.
Who's making
your
money?
Something like that happens to me. Like, you know,
it was Ms. Arnett's
to have your family make that decision for you.
Yeah, it was Ms. Arnett's decision whether or not to leave him on life support, right? Which probably was in and of itself a point of chaos. And even when I was listening to the obituary, it was like he left home at a certain age to go stay at the da 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 youth. I was like, he left home, like of his own volition. He left to go stay. I was like, she definitely wrote this shit. So it definitely felt like there's a tug of war going on behind the scenes. And some people said that Swiss was like out of line for saying that at the memorial, but you know, because he was like, everybody ain't your family. You know, everybody, and it is important. That's what I think everybody has to remember. And I'm saying this even to our peers now, because you know we're old enough to have things to leave or things to fight over. Like, leave that shit because otherwise, what you are doing is putting a burden on
you. Just setting up chaos.
Right, you're
setting chaos. It's gonna be chaos.
Your chaos, life is drama, and mess. Yeah,
and you're not here to fix it. So.
And the people you leave behind are not in a mental or emotional state to make good decisions for you.
That too.
And when you don't leave a plan of action, and Nia's right, and I'm not going to belabor it, but like having a plan, a succession action that what is to happen if you die, that shit is vital. And I'll explain why. I mean, the obvious reasons for it's vital for. But there are immediate concerns. When you die, if you do not have access to bank accounts, if you do not have access to cash, if you do not have access to where the paperwork is there an insurance policy? Has that policy lapsed? Who's been paying that policy? Where is that paperwork? Who is the beneficiary of that policy?
Right.
All of those sorts of things you have to kind of have down. And I had to have that sort of clinical conversation with my siblings, like with my dad and with my mom and all of that sort of stuff. And it was just kind of like, you know, I basically kind of had to sit them down. I was like, we got about 18 months to 2 years. Mm-hmm. So y'all better start mentally preparing. Okay, this is what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. And that works out for my family because you know, when my dad got older, I kind of became the patriarch of my family, even though I'm the youngest one. So they all came to me for those answers, and I was always kind of directing traffic. And it's why I started telling niggas, like, look, nigga, you better go get an insurance policy or you're going in a pine box.
Yeah.
And listen, it's never a comfortable or an easy conversation to have. It's never a good time to have that convo. My mom, when she had a surgery when I was 12 or 13, she was like, look, you're stronger than your brother. These are where the papers are. This is what I want for my funeral. And I was angry with her for like a long ass time for what I thought was doing that to me. But she really prepared me for like, if I don't come out from anesthesia, this
I need somebody
you need to take to the funeral.
Exactly.
Like, I wouldn't have known that without that.
Exactly.
My grandmother had her stroke at 99. So like I spent summers with my grandmother from the time forever, right? But when she was nine, from the time I was about nine, my grandmother would say to me, okay, these papers are over here. This thing is over here. Like everything she did, every real estate transaction, every bank account, I knew what my name was and wasn't on. I knew where everybody's information was. She kept everybody's family information in a box, everybody's socials, everybody's birthdays, I knew where everything was. When my grandmother had her stroke in 99, I was the one person who knew everything. And then when she died, I was the person who planned the funeral because I knew everything my grandmother would want.
What she wanted,
yeah, and my mom has told me for years, this is what I want when I die. Bam, I know. And my mom has sent me, I had copies of everybody's wills. I got copies of power of attorney, like all of that shit, right? And so one of my last conversations with my father, and I don't know if I ever talked about this on the show, but my father did not tell us he had cancer. He knew he had cancer. He did not tell us. He moved all the way to fucking Hawaii. So we couldn't even see him visibly degenerating, right? And deteriorating, rather. And like, I knew something was going on. And one of my last conversations with my father before he died, like the week before, I was like, Daddy, it would take me a full day to get to you if something happened to you. I do not know where your shit is. I do not know what you want. That's when he told me he had put the will in the electric, you know, the circuit breaker box.
Yeah.
That's where my father's will is. Do you think I would have found that?
Nobody would have found it. A maintenance man would have found it cleaning out the crib. A maintenance man would have found it when he was cleaning out the crib.
Yeah, I would have been looking through every drawer. It would have never occurred to me to look in the fucking circuit breaker box to find the will. And I didn't even know what he wanted for his service. Like, none of that. And I'm so glad we had that conversation because then his sister tried to take over the service. And I was like, nope, this is what we're doing. So, you know, it's essential for so many different reasons than just, it's not about a money grab. It's not about making sure even you get whatever. You don't even have to tell your parents to tell you who's getting what. Just tell them to think about it and put it in paper and get it fucking notarized and signed and stamped and filed and just let you know where it is. Yeah. It's essential because you don't want to have to deal with all that shit.
I had to tell a family member, I was like, I said, hey, you know, if you die, like, you do understand that the kids are going to go to their dad. Like, did you guys iron out the succession? Like, did you want, you know what I'm saying? Because she didn't want them to go. She wanted them to go with her mom. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, grandmothers don't take over for parents.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's alive. He's not destitute. He's not in prison. That's not just how this works. You have to actually go to a family attorney. You have to spend the money. You have to actually get that document. You have to iron this sort of shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, you know, listen, man, they're hard conversations to have. They're tedious. It's a tedious process. And like I said in a post, you know what else is expensive and you know what else is tedious? Fucking probate court.
Yep.
Okay. Because I've been down that path too. So I can assure you, this is something you should be thinking about. This is something you should be doing. Age is of no concern. And you should particularly be doing this when you have people that depend on you. People who are literally relying, children, relatives, your wife, or you have a responsibility to ensure that something is in place, my nigga. Mm-hmm. Even if you go down to get you one of them motherfucking Colonial Pen policies.
Whatever the fuck that shit is. Yeah.
Legal, nigga. Write it down. Be like Aretha. Nigga got 8 wills in the kidney drawer. Nigga,
on the yellow pad.
On the yellow legal pad.
Exactly.
Yep. So, you know, peace and love to the Simmons family and his children and his loved ones. And, you know, it's going to be a tough
one. And there is an X album coming. So there's that.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that X album coming too. Yeah. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Yeah, he's at peace. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Get your vaccination. Stop fucking around.
Keep wearing your mask.
Don't listen to this. This is one time where I'm going to say don't listen to the CDC. Because, you know, as soon as the niggas who already don't want to wear masks see people not wearing masks, they're going to be like, fuck it, I'm taking my shit off.
Yeah. Just
keep wearing your mask, please.
Keep wearing your mask. Keep wearing it. And that's it. We're going to wrap it up on that note. I'm watching some more Korean movies I'll tell you about next week. and Inka, you watch some Dragnet.
I don't stay up late enough for that.
You don't stay up late. Okay, cool.
Nah.
All right, so later. See you
next week.
All right.
Bye. Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.